listening to Real Talk on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Here on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Well, it's a great honour because we're joined right now with Dr. Guy Hatchard. Guy is the writer of the Hatchard Report. He's a former senior manager at Genetic ID and is a natural food advocate, which is what we're going to be talking about with him today. Good morning, Guy.
Good morning, Rodney. Good to be here.
We've never spoken.
Right. Well, we're catching up.
Yes. And can I say you have been a beacon of light for me?
Well, we try and I sort of took the attitude early on that whatever was said about the pandemic, we ought to reference it to publish science. And I think that's a safe boat to be, a safe walker to be in, and in these times, because they're very strange times. A lot of polarized opinions, I'm sure you'll agree.
Very strange. Did it surprise you?
Yes. I mean, I think it surprised everyone, didn't it? It was a break. It was a break with the past. I think that's for me, that was what was shocking. It was a break with everything that we sort of, you know, dressed our world up in.
You felt that also, even though you have been into alternative medicine, an alternative way of life for many, many years, you still felt this reach.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, what changed, you know, from a technical point of view was medicine started to cross the cell membrane. You know, that life begins with a cell, and people talk about DNA, yes, DNA, but life begins with a whole cell, which is the DNA, the cytoplasm, and the membrane. And the cytoplasm is the medium by which DNA can express itself. Now, when medicine passed the cell membrane and got into the control system of the body and the cytoplasm, then the potential risks were much, much higher. And that was a structural break with the past.
And the idea that our political leaders would lock us down, first of all, then mandate this jab, and continually declare to this day, over and over, safe and effective.
I was just driving back from down in the car, and I think I could. We're reprising my conversation because it is gobsmacking. I just picked up a book by Walter Isaacson. You know, who did the
he's wonderful.
Steve Jobs. Yeah, he's a wonderful writer. But in 2021, at the sort of height of the hysteria about how we had this wonderful vaccine, he wrote. Or he'd just finished the book interviewing Jennifer Doudna, the inventor of the CRISPR gene editing technique. And so it's all in praise of how we're going into a brave new world. But of course, from that point, everything went wrong. And so the book isn't just entirely wrong.
He's such a disappointment to me because he wrote a book about, I'm sure it was him, Benjamin Franklin, which I adored.
That's right, yes, yes, yeah.
And he wrote a book about Albert Einstein, which I totally adored. And such a clever man, and so wrong about this.
Yeah, well, people...
Isn't it a love of technology? That people that love technology and engineering love the stuff, and they don't see a system. They don't see an ecosystem. They don't see an ecology, they don't see a body system, they don't see the interactions and the complexities of life, the mystery, the marvel. They just see a technical or engineering problem. I'm sick, take a pill.
Well, you know, I know people, because I used to work in the genetic industry, I know people inside the kind of search for gene therapies, and they are quite different from the commercial pushing of the whole concept. Mm. I mean, they know it's risky. But they were suppressed. They couldn't speak up. I have a good friend in London who's one of the top researchers, for example. And yeah, we communicated. He was very worried about it, but he said, "Please don't mention my name. I'll lose my job." So
it's so lovely to be talking to you, and for listeners, I can see Guy, and like so many of these warriors who were prepared to speak out, I can see that you're a lovely soul, because it takes something to speak out, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, because people throw a lot of shit at you. and you lose a few friends.
Did you have your doubts when you were early on thinking, well, maybe I'm wrong?
I did, actually. I mean, I think there was one time where I was driving in the car and I thought, oh, I don't know. You know, maybe we should just
kill it,
then all this madness will go away. And my wife said, absolutely not. We're not doing that. You know, I wasn't serious, but it was, you know, it was an easy way out, wasn't it? You just complied. And I know a lot of people who have complied. I mean, I had a great friend who I went to university with. We both studied theoretical physics, and we parted company over the vaccine. He decided, even though we both understood that this was a genetically engineered virus, he decided, oh, I'll just go out and do it. And for some reason, from that day forward, he just was afraid to communicate with me as we used to. We used to speak two or three times a week. And he died the other week. About 2 weeks ago, he came down with leukemia after he had the vaccine, and then they pronounced him free of leukemia. And then suddenly it came back with like a freight train, and within a few days he was dying. He died alone in hospital. No family there or anything. It happened so quick. He went. And, you know, who knows whether these individual cases, how they're connected to the vaccine, but the statistics are starting to tell us they are.
Mm. Well, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for the Hatchard Report and for being so out there from the get-go, and for your writings making me stronger and strong enough to resist. And it's great to have the opportunity to thank you.
Well, that's very kind of you. I mean, I think, look, this is a lot of people are writing about this kind of stuff and sharing information. And one of the things we're writing
on. Don't be so humble.
Well, one of the things I'm working on now is an international charter of genetic rights. Because, again, this is new medicine. This is different from any other sort of medicine that we've ever had. And we need to have a right to refuse any medical intervention which penetrates the cell membrane and that might alter the genetic structure or function of a cell or multiple cells in any way.
What would have been wrong if they had just taken a bit of spike protein and injected us with that?
Well, a traditional vaccine, yes, but you see, what was the problem was that the spike protein was engineered, and this comes down to the fundamental relationship that we have with our wider genetic environment.
And you meaning engineered in the vaccine or engineered in Wuhan?
Engineered in Wuhan.
Yeah.
And we know this now. No one seriously disputes this. It's you know, there might be
what a shit show. What a shit show this whole thing has been. There's not one aspect of it that isn't a horror show. There is not one, you know, the Wuhan bit, the safe and effective bit, the lockdowns, the masks, the attack on kids. Not one bit of it, that the cover-ups, the cover-up of the lab leak theory, the bullying in science, the denigration of doctors who had to walk away from their sacred oath, every part of it.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And you did right.
It's madness. I keep saying it's madness. It's like a collective madness. You know, they do say that yeah, people lose their minds before the fall.
Yeah.
Are we heading for a fall? Ooh, well.
And they get their minds back. They lose their minds en masse and get their minds back one by one, which I think you can see sort of happening. It's one by one. There's a beautiful story that circulated around COVID by James Thurber called The Day the Dam Didn't Burst. Are you familiar with it?
No, I'm not. I like James Thurber.
Oh, it's a wonderful story about when he was a kid. And they don't quite know when it happened, but suddenly it went through this little town that the dam had burst. And there's no possibility that this dam could have even flooded the village if it had burst. But no one stopped to question it. The true story is like 1905 or some 1910. And everyone just started running. And you'd see people running and you'd start running with them. And the whole town ran and they weren't even sure where they're running to. And then someone had the presence of mind to shout all clear, like a policeman. And then they all decided it was safe. And he said, from that day on, no one ever spoke of it.
Yeah, no one ever spoke of it. Yeah, well, that's really the situation that we're in, isn't it? I mean, it's one of these, it's joined politics, religion, and money or so that you don't talk about.
Have you made a lot of new friends?
Absolutely, yes.
Isn't that the best part?
It is, and a lot of interesting people.
Me too.
I that's been a breath of fresh air, really.
And then you find your new friends who it might have been a day that you met them, and it's so deep, the connection. Because you identify the shared experience and the horror of what it is.
Yeah, and I meet people on the street too. Because
yeah, I bet you do. Because your
recognizable face, so they sort of come up to you and say, "You guy," and
they don't confuse you with Michael Baker.
No, I've got the same sort of glasses.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, I know, but he's something about COVID. Is that Michael Baker? How? But isn't it preposterous? Because I remember, I couldn't stand it. I thought the lockdowns were stupid. And then they said, we're going to give you this injection. Oh, yeah, I'm at the risk category, overweight, old. And we're going to give this injection. Oh, yeah, it goes in your arm. Yeah. And then it's covered in this lipid. And that means, that it will stay in your bloodstream. Oh, yeah. And then it'll get to your cells. And then it'll enter your cells with messenger RNA. What? Yeah. And then this messenger RNA will get inside your cells and your cells will start making this spike protein. And you'd sort of say, is that bad? No. Spike protein will be fine. And then your cells start making the spike protein. And I can remember asking professional people, well, how long will it make it for? Oh, not long.
Yeah, that was the kind of belief.
How much will it make? Oh, not much. Where will it make it? Oh, just in your arm. Who was that character? Berry, is it? The GP Royal Society guy? Berry?
Can't remember.
He was on, I had him on the platform when I was allowed on that. And I interviewed him. And he said, oh, no, it doesn't work like that. And then he had to text me later and say, oh, no, sorry, I had a mind blank. You know, you were right. That's exactly how it works. Because the thing is, the mechanism is preposterous. It's not like, and you're right, it's a whole new medical technology that was never explained.
No, it wasn't.
Calling it a vaccine was superb manipulation.
Yeah, absolutely. People accepted it without knowing anything about the ABCs of genetic intervention risks. You know, this is virology 101. There are well-known risks surrounding genetics, surrounding vaccines for viruses and so on. And all of this was just sort of simply forgotten.
I know we're to talk about something else, but I can't stop me because I'm so enamored of having you on my show. I apologize. And I'm probably going to scabble a wee bit, but it's a bit like when you meet Richie McCaw or, oh, I don't know, Sylvester Stallone. You get so taken aback that you start gabbling. But what's this about DNA being in it?
Well, you know, I've written a book, Your DNA Diet.
Yeah.
And the essential thrust of the book is that with modern research, we can now deduce correctly that as well as the standard aspects of nutrition, like fats, vitamins, and so on, DNA, fresh food that comes from a source based on natural DNA, part of the environment, is essential part of our diet. Now we have research which shows that there are established metabolic pathways whereby the information contained in DNA gets deeply into the body. The gut is an information exchange bus stop for DNA that comes into our diet. So there, the body is eating intelligence as well as eating proteins and vitamins.
Wow.
So on.
And yet your book is called Discovering and Defending Your DNA Diet, Leveraging the Power of Consciousness and Plants to Heal Ourselves and Our World.
That's absolutely, because what is happening is that a lot of foods that we now buy in our supermarkets, packaged foods, contain synthetics rather than natural products. There are products of biotechnology where supposedly natural foods like vanilla, for example, or lemon or carrot have been synthesized. So you'll read on the ingredients that it contains natural vanilla. It'll say that because they're allowed to, but it's not natural vanilla. It's something created in a biotechnology lab. Slight differences with the natural, and those slight differences are very important. It'll also carry contaminants, which are a natural result of the replication process in a biotech vat. So, and you're not warned about it, you're not told about it, but it won't have the natural intelligence which should be part of your diet. And hundreds of ingredients are now being substituted. And, you know, for example, way back in 2017, so this is didn't happen yesterday. In 2017, the MedSafe gave the green light to 3,000 synthetic compounds going into food.
No.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not labeled. There's no requirement to label because of...
And these compounds have hitherto been unknown to our body.
Yeah, but they're different. And look, genetics is extremely precise. It's extremely exact. One of the central things that guides our immune system is the maintenance of our genetic identity. Every single cell in our body has the identical DNA, and that's unique to us. That particular DNA and the body in every single cell, we have trillions of cells, 37 trillion cells. In every cell, 70,000 times a day, there are mechanisms that jump in to repair that DNA and protect that genetic integrity. If you have a transplant, the body will try and fight that organ, transplanted organ, because it has different DNA. And you have to take immune suppressant drugs if you have a transplant. Well, there's something else that happens that's really, really interesting. And this study was published just a very short time ago, a matter of a few weeks ago, that the memories of the person who is donating the organ, who's died, get transplanted into you. and start to take over some of your preferences. You might start to like different food. Wow. You might like to start riding on motorcycles, even whereas previously you were the conductor of an orchestra. These are real examples, by the way. And that happens not just with the heart, but with any organ, because the DNA is not just a material thing. It's also the repository, the biochemistry of the cell, taking the whole cell, is a repository of memory. It's a repository of behavior. It's a repository of information.
We hardly know anything about the body, do we?
No, no, that's right. I mean, this genetics is a new idea. And yet it's been so promoted with public relations. I mean, I was
having my... we thought once you had the DNA code, you'd know everything. But there's a lot more to DNA than just synthesizing enzymes and proteins.
Absolutely.
There's talk of there being frequencies and this constant repair of DNA. So the DNA diet, I'm just fascinated. I'd never heard of this before.
So there are these...
I understand that you want to eat unprocessed food. I understand that natural food is more nutritious, and you don't want to be introducing 3,000 chemicals every time you take a teaspoon out of a packet. So whole foods grown in the garden, raised on grass, are best. But you're saying with this book, there's something in addition to vitamin K. There's something in addition to the minerals. There's something in addition to the calories. There's the very DNA of what you eat as well.
Information. We live in an information age. Well, this is not new. This is information
age. So when I eat a bit of celery, right, whole celery, chomp, 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 I think all that, I quite like chewing on celery.
This is a really interesting field that the ancient health science of India, Ayurveda, which we've used all our life, has quite a deep knowledge of it. They have a materia medica, which is a list of the effects and dosages of herbs, with over 5,000 herbs mentioned. And what they do in their medical system is to combine herbs to have a synergistic effect on particular kinds of health imbalances. So it's not a rigid diet system. It's all about balance, how to balance the system when it gets out of balance. So
the traditional Ayurveda system, understanding herbs, now with this understanding of DNA information through the gut, is, if you like, justifying, supporting, reinforcing what people have known for aeons.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, even in their research of Neanderthal bones discovered in Spain, they found through the teeth that people had a diet that was very rich in herbs. So this is very, very ancient, the fact that we eat a variety. So I'm not proposing a rigid diet. I'm proposing, well, it's not me proposing, I'm describing more variety in the diet. In fact, the suggestion in Ayurveda is that you should have six tastes in a meal. Mm. Say you have bread and butter. You know how Moorish bread and butter is.
Yes, I do.
And you just want more. You know, sometimes it's a bit hard to stop. Well, there's only one essential taste in bread and butter. It's sweet. The butter's sweet and the wheat is sweet. But in Ayurveda, the idea is to have six tastes. So that's salt, sweet, sour, bitter, which is your greens and so on, pungent, which is your hot spices, and astringent, which is your pulses. And if you have all six tastes in a meal, it's balanced and you feel satisfied and you don't feel that you have to have more and more and more. But if you just have one taste, it becomes difficult to control. And people get out of balance with their diet because their diet is not balanced enough. So Ayurveda is a way of balancing that and saying, well, you ought to take some of this and this and this, and then you'll it'll start to put things back into balance.
And you're saying Ayurveda, which is traditional and ancient, we understand why it's successful.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. The modern understanding supports it.
And understanding is these tastes and these herbs are providing your gut with DNA, which is code, information, and your body is using that to repair your DNA. What is it using it for?
Yeah, it's like synergy. I think the best way to say it is it's a synergy. The body and the diet can have a synergy. They can have a resonance. And that can stimulate your system. And well, look, up until quite recently, over 50% of all allopathic medicines were based actually on research on herbs.
Yes,
things
indeed.
Like aspirin and so on. They actually come from research on herbs. So
I should say, in the early days of the pandemic, Dr. Guy Hutchard would write an article, and I'd think, oh, that's a bit far, or that's a bit extreme. 6 months later, gosh, he was 100% right. That didn't happen just once or twice with me and you. That happened a lot. You were always a bit ahead of everything to me, and I always thought that can't be right. No, never. Yep. You were on the money. So I got to say, you have a great track record on all of this. If I got your book, which is called, I'm going to tell listeners, and I'm going to tell you how to get it, because if Guy Hutchard says this is the way to do it, he'll be right. Discovering and Defending Your DNA Diet, Leveraging the Power of Consciousness and Plants to Heal Ourselves and Our World. If I get your book, what would I have for breakfast?
Oh, great question. Now, this is one of the wonderful things about Ayurveda, is not everybody has the same thing. It depends on your constitution. So they designate basically three different forces in the body. They're called Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. But Vata all has to do with the transport and information, keeping things moving. Pitta has to do with digestion, digestive fire. So transport, Pitta is transformation, and then Kapha is structure. So some people have one of these qualities more dominant than another. So people who are overweight, heavy, speak slowly, they think clearly, Kapha kind of person.
That's me.
Yeah,
there think you go. Clearly, but
exactly. So
I'm Kapha. How do you spell that?
K-A-P-H-A. Now, if you wanted to have breakfast, you need to have something to spice your life up a bit. So you would probably put some ginger in with your stewed fruit, or something hot with your porridge. So you that quality of pungent, hot quality sort of gets you going in the morning. But so if you're a Vata person, is more kind of, they're changing their mind quickly.
Oh, I've got a daughter like that.
Lightning fast thinking, but, a little bit scattered perhaps.
Yep.
If it's out of balance, they need something to weigh them down. So they can have the heavier breakfast. That's fine to start their day.
When you say heavier breakfast, what would you suggest?
Well, again, it's not that you have to have this, but heavier means that the qualities of sweet, so that's toast and butter and milk, are fine for you. So your heavier qualities will sort of settle you as you start the day. So in Ayurveda, there's a very simple way. You can even do it yourself at home to determine your body type. And then you can pick the things that you like, because your personal preferences are very important. It is true that one does tend to look for the things that will be good for you. So your personal preferences, and you can just change your diet a little bit. You don't have to.
It's interesting because, like, I'd eat porridge, and all I need is to add a bit of spicy ginger.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are other things that you can do that are really very, very simple in Ayurveda that anyone can do that really help. Sipping hot water during the day is extremely beneficial for health.
How funny.
A lot of problems, inflammatory problems that people suffer from, chronic illness, is greatly helped. You know, you can have a thermos flask with you, for example. You can just
hot tea count?
Just hot water, because you're flushing your system.
Okay, because I drink a ton of tea.
Yeah, but it's got other things in it as well. And I'm just going to plump for this one and say that's one thing that anyone can do that doesn't cost any money that really is a great benefit for health. So there are very simple self-administered procedures in Ayurveda which really help put yourself back in balance.
Well, that's easy. What about lunch?
Lunch, you want to have your heaviest meal because your digestive power is greatest at lunch. And again, we come back to these six tastes. Now, I know that's, it's for most people, they're at work, they're probably thinking, how am I going to manage that? But if I'm busy at lunch, I take a couple of thermoses with me, sort of food thermoses. And so I have something with me. So you need to have variety of vegetables. You need to have some bitter taste. So those are greens. You need to have some pungent. So you might cook with cumin or black pepper or ginger. So you need something hot in there. You need something astringent. So those are like dals, like beans or pulses, and a sweet taste, rice, sour. You might have a little bit of yogurt, or you can even cook your vegetables in a little bit of yogurt, and salt, obviously, but not in too great a quantity. So if you have all those tastes in your lunchtime meal, you'll feel very satisfied, and your digestion can cope with it. Your digestion is much weaker in the evening than it is at lunchtime.
And then we'll complete the three, dinner?
Something lighter, soup and toast, say, fine. You don't.
Well, none of that's hard.
It's not hard, and it's not rigid. So
no meat in there.
I'm a vegetarian myself, but I say if you're going to eat meat, it's much easier to digest white meat like chicken than it is to digest red meat. And all the studies back us up on that. And I know we're a nation of meat eaters and our whole industry is built on it. But nevertheless, lighter, is better because red meat is so similar to our meat that it actually puts a bit of a strain on the body to digest it because it's so similar to what we are.
How long have you been vegetarian?
Since I was 18.
My goodness.
That's a long time.
20 years.
I wish.
Don't we all wish to be 40 again? I remember when I thought 40 was old. Isn't it so fascinating? Now, what is Ayurveda?
Veda means knowledge, and Ayurveda means long life. It means long the life. Knowledge of long life. Ayu means life. So Ayurveda is the knowledge of how to live a long life.
And it's Indian?
Yeah, it goes right back. There are these texts written, a number of texts. They had surgery. And even today in India, a very large percentage of medical consultations are Ayurvedic consultations. And in their medical schools, they can still train in Ayurveda. And the government has a department of Ayurveda where they're trying to protect their traditional system from foreign interference. So there are a lot of big pharmaceutical companies that are buying up Ayurvedic manufacturers and then trying to substitute synthetics. So they have to work hard to protect their traditional knowledge over there.
It's a great evil afoot, isn't there?
Well, it is. You know, I mean, look at simple herb like Relwulfia. Relwulfia controls blood pressure very effectively, but it's not sold here in New Zealand. It's banned because people who manufacture beta blockers, which are prescribed in allopathy for high blood pressure, they don't want the competition.
It's indescribable that people must go into the allopathic industry bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Yes.
Researching, dispensing, diagnosing, and just become part of a profit-soaked, greedy machine that has no regard for human suffering or well-being and is quite content to dispense medicines on a daily basis, making the money and having no good effect and oftentimes very ill effect. And you're just part of that machine.
Well, look at this modern drug, Ozempic or Wegovy. Which is
weird. Oh, yes, I've heard about that. I read that about the Daily Mail. How do you say it? Ozempic.
Ozempic, yeah. I mean, recently doctors have been calling for everyone to be put on an injected weight loss drug. Literally, they've been saying it should be like a statins. There's something that everyone is required or, you know, sort of encouraged to take. But the side effects are horrendous because Ozempic actually interferes with metabolic processes and digestive processes. And
these doctors are just shills. They've been on a conference, had a cruise around the Caribbean, had someone give them some stats, and they've come back paying the piper with the tune.
They don't even give Caribbean cruises these days. They're a bit dangerous. You might catch COVID. But for $5,000, you can get someone to shill for you publicly to go on the radio and tell you something is wonderful. And a lot of these $5,000 are actually paid. You know, it doesn't cost much to get a doctor to shill for you.
There's that old saying, I don't know who said it, that it didn't surprise me that he was corrupt, was it? That he took a bribe. It just surprised me how little he needed. You know?
Yeah. No, that's right. And, well, it's and it's a question of what you're educated with, too. I mean, doctors are not really educated in nutrition. It's not their field. And so even though, you know, in terms of health, the things that determine your health are your diet, your behavior, that means whether you exercise or not, and you know, your avoidance of things that are really poisonous for you, and in going for happier, you know, situations, and getting enough rest. And these are the things that that absolutely overwhelmingly determine your diet. I also do meditation as well, which is very effective for health.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. We're talking to one of the heroes of the COVID era, Dr. Guy Hutchard. I'm a bit in awe. He's come out with clearly a wonderful book, which we're discussing, called Discovering and Defending Your DNA Diet. And it doesn't seem a hard diet, but it seems to make sense. And if Dr. Guy Hutchard says this is the way, it carries a punch. How does someone secure a copy of your book, Guy?
Oh, I then go to thehutchardreport.com and scroll down the page. And right there, actually, on the front page, there's a picture of the front cover. And you click on that, it tells you what you can do to purchase the book.
And what does it cost?
If you want a hard copy, it's $52. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to pay that, fine. You can go on Amazon, and I think it's about $9.
Oh, wonderful. So that's not beyond anyone. That's a couple of coffees. You have been a long-time advocate of this diet?
Yes. Oh, you know, we brought up our kids using Ayurveda, and they were, well, I felt they were very healthy. Of course, again, it's not a rigid diet. It's, you know, I mean, you've got a young son. And when you're young, this kapha quality, this heaviness tends to dominate. So typically young people get a lot of congestive mucus related problems, you know, coughing in the night and so on. Well, what do you do for that? Well, in Ayurveda, you give them a spoonful of honey with some ginger in it when they first wake up in the morning before they have anything else. And that cuts that mucus quality. It's good to have raw honey rather than processed honey, because the heat treatment that they make those, you know, when honey's, you get
yeast, pasteurized
with, yeah, it reduces the quality of the honey.
It knocks out the enzymes.
Yeah. So you get raw honey, you can mix it with ginger, or you can mix it also with turmeric. Turmeric is there's that yellow herb, that it's a powder.
You have a big herb?
We have herbs. Cupboard.
A big herb cupboard.
Huge herb cupboard. Yes, we do. We absolutely do. We have drawers in the kitchen. We have three drawers with that's kind of little stacks. So, you know, there may be in each drawer there are over 100 herbs. And then we have a big cabinet with more on it and a couple of shelves.
And you have a herb garden?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We grow things like basil and, you know, a number of other herbs, thyme, and more traditional herbs that from Western.
And you regard these herbs as not just the taste, but medicinal?
Well, you could say medicinal, but I mean, you need a variety. I am a vegetarian. I have to say, if you're a vegetarian, you need variety.
Okay.
That's important.
I'm a bit taken aback because it seems so wonderful. Because it doesn't, there's a logic to it. Look, I regard the food supply now as toxic.
Yeah.
Definitely. And you can see it's killing people. And none of my kids have succumbed. So obviously I haven't been rigid, because you don't want to make a thing about it when they go off to a party or whatever. But they go off to it when they were younger, particularly they'd go off to a birthday party and be sick for 2 days just eating party food, because at home they wouldn't eat anything that came in a box. And we were very careful with sugar. And like you say, they were extremely healthy and didn't get sick. So I'm fully on board with that. I'm shocked whenever you get look at something in a packet and you read it and it's stuff you can't say, you can't pronounce it, and then they say and other stuff, right? And you're thinking, if it's in a packet, I'm not buying it. I'm almost not buying anything from the supermarket now, in terms of even I try and grow my own vegetables as much as I can for the reason that you well understand. But the food supply has been seriously compromised every which way you look.
It's absolutely true. I mean, the you know, and you look at the latest studies on pesticide contamination in foods that look all shiny. And I remember, you know, sort of thinking that, you know, this shiny apple, it looks wonderful, yes, but it doesn't taste very good. This moth-eaten looking apple that came off my tree, you know, that I didn't do anything to, it tastes really good.
Yeah.
It's, there's just been an industrialization. I mean, it started during the Second World War because a lot of the chemicals that were used in bombs and things like that got repurposed as pesticides or herbicides or fertilizers, or and we lost the kind of, well, we got monoculture where you have vast acres of crops which have to be sprayed because pests in monoculture situations, pests multiply.
Do you know what happened to bread during
the absolutely the Chorley wood bread, the
Chorley wood process, which they didn't perfect until 1962.
Yeah,
and now all our bread that you buy in the shop is made by the Chorley wood process, which is a mixture of chemicals and mechanical processing. There's no natural ferment, or the natural fermentation is shortchanged and curtailed. And now the bread is tasteless and virtually inedible. And kids can't take it because they have gut upset from the bread.
Yeah, we make our own bread. We make sourdough bread at home, and we make flatbreads, so without any rising agent in it.
Well, don't get me talking bread. I bake every day.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you go. We're kindred spirits.
And it is so shocking.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that goes into the bread is the hard fats, the hydrogenated fats. A lot of the breads, that springy quality, and they have all kinds of different names for hydrogenated fat now, because it's called vegetable fat. It's called, and it has other exotic names so that you won't realize it's in it. But you know, that stuff is pure poison.
Pure it's poison. Interesting.
I listened to this program a few years ago, which was about the situation in Merseyside, where all the sewers were becoming blocked with these hydrogenated fats. And basically the program consisted of interviewing the men who had to go down the sewers, shovel this stuff out, these massive, massive, tons and
balls
tons
of fat.
Balls of fat. And then the horror of horror, they explained that how they reprocessed this fat out of the sewers and it re-entered the food chain.
No.
Yes.
You're making that up.
No.
You're making that up, guy. I can't.
No. They started feeding it to cattle is what they did.
Oh, my God.
It was called the food program. It was on the Radio 4 in the UK. Gee, I was over there visiting.
And that hydrogenated fat, that's made in a factory, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hydrogenated fat is, it's got nothing to do with vegetables. In fact, basically, they bombard oils with hydrogen atoms, which cause polymerization. So you get long molecules that join together. So fats that would normally be liquid at room temperature suddenly become solid. And that's what gives the bread that kind of uniform shape.
And if I'm correct, my understanding's correct, our body has never known that substance before.
Well, yeah, no, it clogs you up, and it's best to avoid it. And as I say, I'm like you. I our supermarket trolley is, you know, it's not very full these days.
And you don't go into the middle aisles with all the boxes.
No,
it's a painful world, Guy. It must relate, this diet too, must relate to people's anxiety, anxiousness, some extent depression, because
it could relate to inflammatory illness, things like arthritis. And again, you know, say you have arthritis in your knee. A lot of people have arthritis in their knee. What does Ayurveda recommend? Well, Ayurveda identifies 6 stages of the development of a disease, and only the final stage is the appearance of overt symptoms. They identify these stages so that you can actually prevent the illness, the illness accumulating in a particular area. Say, if you have arthritis in the knee, what I'd recommend, or what Ayurveda recommends rather, is you take some castor oil, which is that sort of sticky stuff that, for those of us who are old enough, our mother used.
Mum used to give it to us.
And you rub it into the knee until it's hot. It's very sticky, and you rub it into the knee over a period of, say, 10 minutes, and the knee gets very hot, and the castor oil penetrates there, and it starts to shift the nodules of that are causing the arthritic pain. I had arthritis in one knee years and years ago, and I just spent, for 2 weeks, I rubbed that castor oil in
every
day, and it's gone. I then went back to the doctor. They did an X-ray. No, it's not there anymore.
No. Because like arthritis is degenerative, it's not supposed to get better.
Well, if you let it go, it's going to be degenerative, isn't it?
And same for your hands, your fingers?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Castor oil is a really a miracle. But they have a whole knowledge of oils in Ayurveda, particular oils for particular things, mustard oil, sesame oil.
And this is people that are selling essential oils too. That's like a similar thing. That's Ayurveda.
There is a branch of Ayurveda. Ayurveda has lots of different branches. Okay. One is aromatherapy. Is the different smells.
Wow. Tell me, is the best start to follow this field of inquiry and experiment with my body, is the best place to start with your book?
There are much better books than my book. I mean,
you're too humble.
No, it's true. My book is, there are books by someone like Vasant Ladd, LADD, on Ayurveda, which are very comprehensive. He's a properly trained physician. My book introduces the concept, but in the mold of what I am. A lot of my book is attacking the way that the modern food and medical system is undermining our health. So I'm more on the don't do this, and I don't have lots of information about do it. There are physicians, Ayurvedic physicians here, and now we have a much larger Indian population. There are a significant number of Ayurvedic physicians who you can have a short consultation with, and that's one way. But Vasant Ladd's book is very good.
Can you spell his name again?
LADD is his surname. Vasant, VASANT. He has a good introduction to Ayurveda, for example.
How did you get into this?
I became interested in meditation, and it was a sort of offshoot of my interest in meditation when I first went to university. It was the time when the Beatles were doing
Maharishi Yogi.
And I met Maharishi, someone who had a huge influence on my life, actually. But he was looked in. I mean, one of the things that he undertook in India was to really look deeply into Ayurveda and try and revive and strengthen the traditional principles, because Ayurveda is something that was passed on in families, you know, from father to son, and with the sort of modern pace of life, and that was getting disrupted. And he spent a lot of time strengthening Ayurveda. And it connects with meditation, because in Ayurveda, the founder of Ayurveda, who wrote a book, Charak was his name, Charak. You know, a long time ago. How long ago? I don't know, 1,000, 2,000 years. It's a very old book. But Charak said that the principal cause of disease is something he termed in Sanskrit that pragya parad, which means literally the mistake of the intellect. That disease really begins when you stop taking care of your mind.
Wow.
When you start to, it's like living, putting it very, very simply, it's like living in a house. If you forget about the foundations and you don't make sure they're okay, the whole house can fall down. So we're living in the body, and the foundation of the body is, as we began, into the intelligence of nature, or we use the term information also. Is that intelligence which is the essence of the body. So taking time to make sure we don't lose contact with the universal source of life.
When I went off to university at 18, the last thing I was interested in was meditation.
Well, it was probably true of me too. But I just wasn't...
Was there a spark that got you there?
Absolutely. I had a friend, Mick Chrysanthou. I was studying theoretical physics. And one day, and having a jolly good time, as everyone does when they went off to university, a swinging university in the 60s. And one day Mick Chrysanthou said to me, he said, "I'm going to learn meditation today. Do you want to come?" And I thought, yeah, okay. And that was it. You know, I mean, I went along with him, and I remember learning meditation, and I had such an experience. It completely opened my mind to something I didn't realize even existed.
My goodness.
And I thought, wow, this is an amazing thing. And
that was the first go?
Yeah, particularly that first go. Yeah, it was like a door opening. Yeah, absolutely.
And would that be a common experience? Or is that unusual?
I think if you learn in, as I did, from a person who was deeply connected to these traditions in India. So not a modern interpretation, or not from a cell phone. You know, people are, excuse me, learning meditation from cell phones these days. It's a different thing. In India, they have, it's called an initiation. There's some respect to a tradition, and then there are steps. You do this, now do this, what happened, do that. So you have a personal instructor. That worked for me.
What happened to your friend? Did he stick with it?
No, he didn't. He didn't. He had a rather tragic life, actually. He didn't stick with meditation. And I'm not necessarily putting it down to them, but I lost touch with him, but someone told me much later that he died very young.
And if someone was to adopt the, I hope I pronounce it right, Ayurvedic lifestyle.
Yeah.
Would they see improvements day one, or is this months and years away?
Everything, when it comes to diet and, everything takes time. But, it depends on which direction you're facing in. Are you facing in the direction of progressively worse health, or are you facing in the direction of progressively better health? And it's not going to be, it's not going to be possible for me to say that everybody makes progress at this rate, because people have different health conditions. More than 50% of people these days have chronic health conditions.
And what I certainly observe is if people knock out processed food, they feel an immediate lift, whatever the diet they do.
Absolutely.
It's getting rid of the processed food. There's something in there that is, there's a complication in there that you notice day one.
So it doesn't have
And I think,
it doesn't have the intelligence in the food. It doesn't have the intelligence. It's gone. It's been fried.
We have the book, ladies and gentlemen. It's called Discovering and Defending Your DNA Diet. We've been speaking to the author, Guy Hutchard, PhD, who modestly says there is a couple of books out there that are even better, but it's a good place to start. You can find the book at Hutchard.com. Is that the
Hutchard Report?
Hutchardreport.com. It's a funny thing. You don't know email addresses and phone numbers and that. Now you just push on it and it goes there. So I never know. But that's where you'll find it. The hard copy is $52 if you want to ruffle it with your fingers and feel it. But you can get the digital copies for $9 or so from Amazon.com or from Kindle. Amazing. And, of course, the author is a genuine hero who, through the years, the tough years, has kept us up to play, informed, brought us together, and given us the knowledge to back up our instinct to be locked up, locked down, jabbed and jabbed, and mandated. So Guy Hutchard, for that reason alone, I'll buy your book, and I will read it, because you've been such an inspiration and a leader to me.
Well, that's very kind, Rodney. And I'm very inspired that you're working there at Reality Check Radio. Good place.
It's been absolutely wonderful, Guy. And what makes it is the community, just like those people that you meet in the street, the listeners and the community that RCR is building, and those three wonderful ladies who put it all together with Voices for Freedom and now this. They're building something very special. And the way I look upon it is, I don't quite know what it is. I don't quite know where it'll end up, but I feel it's extremely important and the most important thing I've ever done.
I agree. Because we're at the watershed. We're in the watershed.
We are.
Which, whatever we decide to do now, yes, it's going to affect the whole direction of mankind.
Yes, and we have to keep our traditional ways and keep our community strong, keep close to nature and to each other. And I think we're starting to perceive the enemy. Can't quite put our finger on it, but man, it's been horrific. And like, again, I just can't picture how people could do this to food, how people could do this to medicine, how people could do this to government, how people could do this to our court system. Everywhere you look, there's been this massive disruption, and you're absolutely right. It'd been going on, but there was a period before COVID, and there's a period after COVID, and it's two separate worlds.
That's right. Absolutely.
And, Guy,
and good that we've been talking about some of the solutions today.
Yes. Get Guy's book. Go to hatchartreport.com. If you're not following Guy, you should be. I'll close it there. You're on Reality Check Radio. I'm going to tear up. You're on Reality Check Radio, Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Send us a text, please. I can't even think of the number. Someone will know it. And email me inbox at realitycheck.radio. Thank you so much for listening, and aren't we blessed to have people like Guy in our world.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.